HD Smartcast. You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Hello and welcome to season 2 of Dreamers and Unicorns, or HD Smartcast original. Now, this is a show about leadership, talent, culture, skills, and everything that shapes our world of work. In each episode, you will meet a dreamer or a unicorn. So, who is a dreamer? Of course, you know that one. I know you will say that anyone with an unfulfilled dream is a dreamer. But who is a unicorn? Well, you know, think about it like this. A unicorn is the next big thing. Everyone talks about them. You know, they attract admirers and leave us wondering, how do they do it all? They take the road less traveled, and that becomes a source of inspiration to everybody else. In this podcast, I want to acknowledge and thank our knowledge partners, the Society for Human Resources Management, which is the voice of everything which is important in the world of work. Our other knowledge partner is TAGGD, that is TAGGD, a digital ready platform that makes talent acquisition on demand a reality. And me, I am Abhijit Bhadri. I work with organizations and leaders on their leadership, talent, and culture. This is just the subject of a book that I've recently written, which is called Dreamers and Unicorns. I also coach individuals who are navigating shifts in their careers. How would I describe today's guest? Let me just say that he has a silver shock of hair on his head, and he's the CEO of the Professional Volleyball League, a cricket analyst for CricBuzz, the project director for FIFA Under 17 World Cup. But if I told you that he was the team director of Kolkata Knight Riders, then there is only one person who fits this description. That is Joy Bhattacharjee, one of the best loved voices in sports. You will discover that there is much more to be joyful about than sports, because he's a student forever and he's a friend I've always deeply, deeply admired. Joy, what is this whole obsession with sports that you have? That's what I want to talk to you about. And welcome to the show of Dreamers and Unicorns. It's lovely to have you.
Thank you so much for inviting me here. Lovely to be back. I've been part of, met you in so many other professional places, and it's just wonderful to be here talking about stuff that's really important to both of us.
So, what all have you done? I know that you've been, working with set up in cricket. You've done volleyball. You've sort of looked at football. How do you pick a sport that you want to take to the masses? What is your formula? What do you do? Tell me about that.
I think it starts off from less about the sport that I do as to how I was involved with the sport. So I started off in IMG when it was the first, when it owned Indian cricket, hockey, Indian football, working on the production side of things. That means actually making programs, making sure live cricket happens later on at ESPN Star Sports, creating telecasts, creating quiz shows, game shows, but also a lot of live sport. So I saw it from the broadcast point of view. And then from there, I went on to the Kolkata Knight Riders, which is a very different kind of view, which is a very intimate view where you are part of a team. And what you're trying to do is manage the internal dynamics of a team, see that you help the coach and captain in making the successful franchise, trying to make the best picks in the auction. So that's a very, very different role. And then from there on, I was the project director of FIFA Under 17 World Cup. And the interesting thing there was that FIFA is like, it's probably the world's oldest sporting entities, the FIFA and the Olympics. They know best how to do events. So seeing how an international body tries to do an event and working with them in making a World Cup was a huge, huge learning. So that was organizing international tournaments. And then from just being a part of one team to running a league, which is a pro volleyball league, starting at the scratch, getting people to bid on teams, getting the teams in. So all these are very different journeys. And the last one, of course, being part of CricBuzz, is almost back to my broadcast days, where instead of being behind the camera, in front of the camera, but very, very different roles. So other than just changing sports, which has gone from cricket to volleyball, but in my ESPN days, I did a lot of hockey as well, did a lot of football there as well. It's also been a change of how I've had to interact or work with that sport. And it's been a fun journey. It's been a really fun journey.
So when you start to work with any one particular sport, what changes with you? How does it change life for you?
Look, when I sort of got into, say, cricket or KKR, you have to get into it. You have to just love it and be a part of it. You see, you can't, sport is one of those things that you can't attack or work with if you don't have passion. So when I worked with cricket, I just lived, eat, ate and breathed cricket. You know, it was just a part of me, and KKR was so much a part of me. I knew every player, every situation, every team. And look, cricket is easy because I know a lot of cricket anyway. Anyone who's grown up in India in the 80s and 90s and read and watched is a cricket buff as well. From there to football, as I said, when you reach football and you start a new game, again, football I know at the World Cup level, at the international level, and maybe at the Kolkata League level, because, you know, anyone from Calcutta is, you know, a part of East Bengal, Mohun Bagan, now Mohammed, and, you know, it's so inextricably a part of our culture. But understanding what football was at the top level, what made it tick, you know, how to make football big in India, those are fascinating, fascinating parts of it. And then volleyball again, you know, how big it was internationally, how, what kind of a culture it was. So you have to, it's like, you know, the way I say it, it's like doing a film. That when you get into that film, you must be in love with the, if you're with the leading lady, because if you're not, you're not going to do justice to the role. You know, just have to immerse yourself in whatever it is that at that point in time you're doing.
Joy was the head of programming for the History Channel and National Geographic for South Asia, the ESPN Star Sports first Indian head of production. So in some senses, what he did in the early stages of his career, in his, shall we say, the dreamer phase of his career, has actually prepared him for a career in sports, which means what you do in your dreamer phase is actually something that shapes the way you behave as a unicorn. It shapes the choices that you have as a unicorn. Are these things that turn a game like, you know, cricket, of course, India is already fairly big in that. Football, not so much. And if you look at volleyball, pretty much, you know, it's not a very mainstream sport in India. To take something like volleyball, which I would say it's in pretty much like a dreamer game right now. It's played by a few people, but it has huge potential. Why is it that some games become unicorns? You know, they grow up, catch the imagination. What happened in cricket, which has yet to happen, say, in football or, you know, hockey or, for that matter, volleyball now? What would be your analysis of that?
Okay, so the first part of it is success. Success plays a huge part of it. I mean, if we had not won the 1983 World Cup, things would have been very different. Because cricket and football in the 70s, you know, even if you watch an Amal Palekar film, Golmaal, you know, guys are going to watch hockey also on the field. They're going to watch Govinda and Phillips play as well. And they're going to watch cricket. So it's pretty much an even keel out there. At 83, with the success of 83, things changed. And I think one of the things that happened was it's not just that 83 changed. Cricket is well run and well administered in this country. For all the personal fighting, for all the ego clashes, and there are lots of them, basically they've never allowed that to impact the game. And therefore, if you see cricket in India, every player you talk to, there's an under-12 system, an under-14 system, an under-16 system, an under-18 system. The cricket net to catch good talent is so big and so basically so strong now that it's created a system which is a monster. I mean, just churns out. Look at this current IPL, the kind of players you're getting out there is unbelievable. So that's what one of the things. But there are a couple of other things. Like, I'll talk to you about hockey, and why I want to talk about hockey is because you're talking about what makes a unicorn. So a lot of people said, let's make Indian hockey really big.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the problem. Hockey as a sport, first and foremost, any sport today, for it to work, it must be a watchable event on a screen. So by a screen, I don't mean a television set necessarily. It may be a tablet, it may be a mobile, but it must be watchable on a screen. Now, why do I say that? I say that because if you don't watch, the revenue skew is hugely towards the product you put on air, whether it's sponsorship, whether it's advertising. So people coming to stadiums play a very small part in revenue, even in cricket. So even people are talking about IPL teams not getting money. IPL teams make about 25 times the money out of broadcasting and sponsorship than they make out of gate revenue. That's the fact of the matter.
Wow.
So that's the skew. So what does that mean? That means basically that if a game has to succeed, it must look good on the screen. Now, the problem with hockey is small ball, mm-hmm. lot of action, here, there, everywhere, and you can't follow the ball. So, hockey is great to watch in a stadium. It's not a great TV game. And that's why you'll see hockey is not number one anywhere in the world.
But how do you then explain something like ice hockey, which is a very, very fast game? And it's similar.
Ice hockey.
It has a lot of people watching it on the small screen.
So ice hockey, if you watch ice hockey is played in a much smaller ring. The puck is actually much larger than the puck that you have. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the actual ground, there are only six players out there. So, in fact, hockey is now trying to do a new avatar, which is a 5-on-5 hockey, or do something that works. Because ice hockey works. Because the puck is also bigger. See, table tennis, another game. Great game to play. Very difficult to watch on TV. Why? Mm-hmm. The ball is small. The action is so fast that you can't really enjoy it. Whereas take the same game, tennis, which is slightly larger ball in a court, which you can see, and suddenly tennis is a very watchable sport. So if you're not a watchable television sport, life is difficult. And when I mean television, I mean a watchable screen sport. So similarly, volleyball has what basketball has, the attributes which are important. Big ball.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can see the ball. The action is apparent. And there's a lot of athleticism. You know, guys are jumping 3.5-4 feet to smash, somebody's trying to block it. There are action points happening every second. So volleyball in that sense is a good sport to make good on television. So those are the kind of things that, so when you try and make a unicorn, I would venture that making a unicorn out of say a basketball or a volleyball is easier, or a tennis is easier than trying to make it out of say a hockey. Because the basic thing is that if people don't like watching it in the screen, so you would say, why not cricket? Cricket has a very small ball, big field.
Yeah.
90% of cricket you watch is replays. The hot action in cricket is very short. It's only 10, 12 seconds. The guy is running in, he's bowling. Secondly, the hot action, you always catch because the cameras are focused out there down the pitch. So you always see the hot action in cricket. Okay? Once the ball is hit, okay, then the cameras move around a bit to try and catch in the field. But once they catch in the field, we spend every ball, we look at least 2 or 3 replays of the ball. Okay, that's why. You can't get that many replays in a hockey or a football because the action is continuous. The action in cricket is discrete. So cricket is a game of replays. You know, replay after replay after replay after replay. That's why every move in cricket you can see 5 times on. And that's what gives cricket its advantage.
So you're basically saying that the game has to be such that it can be, it is adaptable to the small screen, the mobile screen, and the action should keep the viewer engaged. And would it therefore be fair to say that we were just lucky that we were good in cricket, which happens to be a game which is very amenable to the mobile screen, and therefore, you know, it just took off, and therefore, you know, we got a lot of sponsorship.
Absolutely.
So is it fair to say that apart from 2 or 3 sports, it would be hard for people to survive as a professional player in, you know, in any sport which the individual may be passionate about? So I may be more passionate about hockey than something, but then there will never be revenues in hockey. Is that how it will turn out to be?
I think revenues in hockey overall, I think, are never going to be high thanks to it. See, there are games, every game must have a passion on this thing. Or it must have a set of people who are so crazy about the small set, but they're so crazy about it that they'll keep following. So there are lots of examples of that. Golf is a great example. Golf is not the number one sport in any country. But it has a very rich clientele right at the top who are financially well off and who are fanatic about golf. Another great example, there's a thing called the Ironman Triathlon.
Yes.
The Ironman Triathlon is crazy. You have to swim some 20 kilometers, run a certain amount. It is unbelievably tough. Cycle, swim, run. Now, it's also over some 18, 20 hours. Now, would you be able to put it on television and watch it? No, you wouldn't. But worldwide, okay, you put it on, say, a platform like a Facebook. Worldwide, there may be only 50,000 people watching the Ironman Triathlon. But those 50,000 people would cheerfully pay $100 to watch it. So then you either satisfy a niche very, very well, or you have a sport that advertising, and because of its mass appeal, advertising and numbers really work for you. It has to work this way or that. If you're caught in the middle, which is like hockey, what hockey situation is, because That's the problem. Hockey is not, if you say it's a passion, it's not a passion in any one country. Hockey is not a number one sport. You see the countries that play it well, Britain, the Netherlands, Belgium, Germany, Australia, Argentina, none of them they're number one. India, for that matter, Pakistan. I mean, we'd like to say hockey is our national sport, but the fact of the matter is hockey versus cricket in India and Pakistan is a no-brainer today.
When you take sports, there is also this question of generalist versus specialist. Think about a career choice. What is better to pursue? Should you be a generalist or a specialist? Either you take up a mass sport like cricket, which is a combination of discrete action, athleticism, and therefore makes it suitable for mobile viewing and can scale up. That brings in money through advertising, or else you choose a niche audience that is rich, for example, golf or Ironman. So my question really would be, even though hockey is our national game, will it ever become a unicorn if you apply the same yardstick? But then I have a different question for you to think about. If a kid took up skiing, wrestling, handball, football, tennis, and then swimming, what do you think happened to the kid when he grew up? The kid in question I'm talking about is Roger Federer, who attributed a lot of his success to the wide range of sports that he played while he was growing up. Career paths are rarely straight, and a broad exposure often prepares a person to wear multiple lenses. And if you want to know more about this, well, I would certainly recommend you read the book Range by David Epstein, a terrific book to understand what should you pursue, be a generalist or a specialist in today's world. You know, the other thing that when you mentioned this that struck me was, you talked about the fact that cricket has got this thing at every level, there is a talent filtering. And so any game, so in the corporate equivalent, you would say, cricket gets its, you know, management trainees or apprentices, and then they become, you know, first time managers, then they become senior directors, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, therefore you have the C-suite, which is people like the players who are there in IPL, et cetera. Is it that the talent strategy of the game has to be changed, or would you rather change the format of the game? Which means, if I were to, you know, say that we create both a talent filtering system or something in, you know, which makes people become passionate about the way this new format is being played. So like test cricket changed to IPL. Is that the way to pivot the game? What would you say?
So look, if you say football, say, for example, okay. Football, the big thing is that, you know, we try and play 11-11 players. When I was a part of the Under-17 World Cup, we did something called Mission 11 Million, which was to make sure 11 million kids kick footballs. Why? Because we believe that football is a perfect game for a resource-poor country like India. All you need is one ball and four chappals, basically two pairs of chappals, and you can play a game. And that's literally that. It requires the least resources, and it is perfect for the kind of population that we are. The question is, then we have to teach them, how do you play 5-on-5 football? And what you have to do is, the problem is that any sport is finally not like studies. It will always give you a good career. So it has to be a combination of a push that, okay, more coaching, more games to play, more people to select people at the lower level, and a pull. So a great example of a pull is that, you know, after 1948, T.O. Au was a Northeasterner. He was the captain, Assamese. He was the captain of the Indian football team in the 1948 Olympics. After that, you know, you've had one Renadi Singh or somebody. Only when Baichung Bhutia became a hero from Sikkim, did the Northeast tap open up. Today, 70% of our team is from the Northeast. 70%, 80 to 85% of the junior team is from the Northeast. Because with the push that, okay, we need coaching, we need people, you also need the pull. That one Baichung broke that barrier and created this entire wave of talent that came in from the Northeast. And that's something that you need. So while you need under 14 and under 16 and under 18 tournament, you need a couple dev to go and win a World Cup for kids to say, I want to be a couple dev. So if you don't have that as well, you need the push, you need the training system, you need everything, but you also need the pull. You need that one star of person, this guy saying, I want to be like that person.
Which probably also explains something like, you know, the impact that Mary Kom has had on, say, boxing, women's boxing. But why has that not scaled up? You know, she is, of course, celebrated. She has won the success. Then why has boxing not become just as powerful? Is that a social barrier that boxing has to break? And would Northeast be our hope for the future in terms of sports?
Northeast is already a future in terms of sports.
In every sport. I mean, should we then say that, you know, Northeast is going to be the place where the sports ministry must focus and just grow all our players from there? Is that something one should do?
Look, you can't grow all our players. We have a lot of other places which are fantastic. There is a tribal belt in Odisha, Jharkhand, which has some fantastic athletes. There are players coming in from Telangana. There are players coming in from the south. You know, Kerala, volleyball, basketball, some amazing players. Up north, Punjab, physically very strong. So we need them all. But here's something that I'm saying. The problem with boxing is that it's a sport which is has social taboos associated with it, and it's not easy to get into. Okay. And therefore, boxing is difficult to develop. Let me take you on a different example. PV Sindhu. Okay, and here is something I'm telling you that's not anecdotal. So, if you look at the number of badminton academies and stadiums that have opened in the last 5 years, I can tell you in the NCR, there are 350 to 400 establishments where you can pay and play badminton. That means you go there, you pay money for an hour, 2 hours, you pay there and play. And the number of academies that have started off seeing this one player. Okay, it is definitely not just her. Sindhu, Saina started it off. Saina started off, Sindhu continued it. But say badminton, where there is no such social taboo and it's an individual sport, see the difference that a couple of successes, a silver medal, a bronze medal has made. It has changed the sport. Because people see it, every mother is seeing a Sindhu or a Saina in their daughter. And that's important. So it does work. It's just that the sport also needs to be amenable to it. And then if you have boxing, say, badminton is a better run federation. You have people like Gopi Chand and Prakash and Vimal Kumar who are giving back to the game. Unfortunately, 90% of the sports federations in India are corrupt and incompetent. So that is itself a huge problem.
And, you know, when you look at your own passion for sport, you know, you've kind of really looked at sport in multiple dimensions. You know, you've written about it, you've spoken about it, you've organized it. And, you know, which of these would you say is the most difficult aspect for somebody to learn and which has taken you the most amount of time?
I think all of them it all depends. I mean, difficult to learn. To master, I think none of them I could master because mastering anything requires a lifetime of ability. But the thing which was the journey that was for me the most tumultuous was the KKR journey. Because you see, watching something from a broadcast booth or even as a fan feeling bad about victory or defeat was easy. You know, you have a certain amount of distance. Here, when you walk in there, and I was fortunate, people would say I was unfortunate, but I was actually fortunate that we started hellishly. We had terrible season. The second season that IPL, we went to South Africa. There was controversy about some fake IPL player. We lost 9 matches in a row. The entire coaching staff got sacked. Tumultuous times. And to be able to, I think, as I said, the bravest thing that I've ever done in my life is after, and there's a hotel in Johannesburg where, you know, all the teams used to stay.
Right.
And the bravest thing I've done is after our 7th defeat, to go down to eat dinner out there and to watch the other team, eyes in the other teams. And they were not that they were ever insulting and all, because teams know that, you know, it could be them tomorrow, you know, whatever can happen. But there was pity in their eyes. You know, there was pity saying that, you know, these guys just cannot get their act together. So going there, having that experience and from there understanding that what is it that actually makes a team. And it took us a hell of a journey there to say that, okay, we are the worst team in the IPL. What is it that we can do to make a successful franchise? That journey, that was going through fire in one way, and that changed just not the team, but changed all of us as people who are part of that journey. It just changed us.
And, you know, what was your role in making that turnaround? If you had to go back and help somebody understand that when you face defeat in a massive way, series, not just one or two, I mean, you had a sort of spate of that. How do you bring morale back into a team when you go through that? Because, and the reason why I'm asking is, you know, Joy, there are so many businesses which have experienced 7 months of failure, you know, in a series. And you know, they're going through this kind of a very bad phase. What can they do? What can they learn? And what would you advise them if you were, you know, telling them what to do? There are people who have experienced 7 months of not finding a job. You know, so when you have that, what is it that you should be doing for yourself and for others if you see there's somebody around you?
So there are two parts. One is that if you end the season and you have a chance to start a new, that's a different thing. But if you're in the middle of a season and you're going through this horrific run, what we always try to do, which is focus very short term. So we immediately said, tomorrow we have training at 8 o'clock in the morning till 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and then we're going to meet in the evening, and this is what we're going to do. And that's it. Create routine structures which are very short term, very basic. Keep people focused on what immediately small term needs to be done. The 1-1-2-2 small things. Because every time you look at the big picture, it will just freak you out. So you need to make the game as small as possible, as basic as possible. When you go onto the field the next time, you say, first 5 overs, whatever is going to happen, baki dekha jayega. Next 5 overs. So actually we went through this in 2014, the year we won our last championship, and my last year at KKR, we were 2-5. We had won 2, lost 5. And the last 2 losses have been humiliating losses. We got smashed by CSK. And then in a match against the Rajasthan Royals, we're chasing 150. We are 128 for no loss. And Praveen Tambe comes and takes 6 wickets in 7 balls, and we lose the match.
Oof.
And the dressing room is like stunned, because finally we thought that's a match we can win. And we are now 2-5. 2 days later, there's a match in Delhi. And all the coaching staff, I remember Trevor, myself, just sat and said, okay, guys, 48 hours, we have to keep the guys as busy as possible, and as they cannot brood on this game. So we said, okay, fine. Today's this thing, evening, you've got to do something. You're doing a sort of quiz, some sort of event is there. Next day, we are flying in the morning. Next day, evening, we are requested somebody, please throw a sort of small party for the team. We did 2 things. We held our shape as a team. We didn't suddenly say, no recrimination in the dressing room, nothing. We held our shape because we said, we are not so bad. This team is not so bad. And we just said that if we just keep these guys mentally okay till the next match against Delhi, we'll beat them. And that's exactly what happened. We went there, we beat Delhi. You're still 3-5, okay? Your chances are up. After we won that match and that psychological hug was over, we looked at one match at a time. Next match, Kings 11, okay. This match, this day, we'll see. Uske baad jo hoga, so hoga. Oh, one match. We won 9 matches in a row and we won the IPL. Then we won another 5 and reached the Champions League final. But that's what it was. We broke. Whenever you are in real trouble, break your problem down to very, very small, doable bits. And don't even think beyond those next 5 overs, those next 2 balls, those next 1 day. So if you're saying, today I don't have a job, today I am going to send these 3 job applications between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock. These 2 guys I'm going to call up. Uske baad jo hoga, I have no idea. And I think that's what worked for us. And I don't know. It worked on a personal basis also. That theory of trying to break it down has worked for me.
If there is one thing that sports really teaches us, it is how do you handle failure and success? Well, you know what? Success is very often much tougher to handle than failure. So reflect and take stock after any event. And the second thing that I like what Joy talks about is when you experience failures, shorten the time horizon, make it much shorter and don't brood. I really love the story of KKR that Joy shared. So I'm going to, now move on to talk about you as a person. You know, what kind of stuff do you do when you're not thinking sports? What is the other side of Joy? We all know Joy as the sports person. You know, what else are you passionate about?
So if you're a quizzer, you're passionate about a whole lot of things. So I quiz a lot. So I read a lot about history, I read a lot about science, I read a lot of fiction. So basically, as I said, I live in what I say is a dream world for any Bengali born in the 60s, 70s or 80s, I live in a dream world. Because the fact of the matter is, compared to our income, our ability to buy any book we want to, okay, watch any film we want to, because thanks to Netflix and Amazon, and listen to any music we want to, is like ridiculously cheap. So if you go back to yourself, your own myself in the 80s and you say, you know what, I can buy any book I want to any day and I don't even need to bother about it. I can listen to any music I want to. It's like being in a cornucopia. You know, you have everything you want. So that's why I say we live in a dream age, and sometimes we don't sit back and realize how amazingly lucky. I remember being in a building in Greenview and saying, one new book has come and I'm the seventh person to borrow it because I'm in seventh in line to borrow it, because by the time it comes to me, it has to go through five other people and everyone has limited books. Today, those are not issues at all. And I just cannot, sometimes I believe that we look at all the problems that surround us. We cannot believe at the abundance that is there around us, which we just choose to. I mean, today I want to read, my father was in the 65 war. I read a lot about the history of that period. Today, the kind of resources that are available on the net for that are unimaginable. So, yeah, we live in a golden age and we just don't know it. It's so amazing.
Yeah, I totally agree that, you know, the number of things that you can do, the affordability of things that earlier were a very significant chunk of, even your pocket money. I mean, forget your earning situation. In your pocket money days, it was disproportionately high. What is it that you look forward to, you know, if you were to think of something that you would do in the next 2 years? I'm not going to ask, you know, a very long time frame. I don't believe in that. But what would be that, sport that you would take up perhaps, or, something else completely not related to sport? What would that be?
See, professionally, one of the things that I do want to do is that I want to do a film. I know that you've been a part of a film, I know. But I want to do a film about my parents and their relationship. You know, my father had a very, very special relationship with my mother. She had Alzheimer's, and the way she looked after him was amazing. So I want to look at something. I think there are stories to be told both there and in sport, which I'd definitely like to explore over the next 2 years. I have personal goals as well. I want to sort of get into reading Bengali properly after a long time. And, you know, my Bengali reading is halting because I haven't practiced for 35, 40 years. And I never learned it because I was in I moved from army station to army station. So by the time I got to Kolkata, I never learned reading Bengali as it were. So I read very haltingly. I want to learn it and I want to go back. And I mean, that's it. Like this year was yoga year for me, learning yoga. So next year is going to be Bengali and trying to do this, trying to do something in sport, which is sport fiction, which interests me.
Oh, that's interesting. Sports fiction. So we'll see more writers, getting inspired by you, Joy, and more power to that. I hope you are going to, do that kind of new genre of writing.
Yeah. No, but I want to ask you something. I mean, you were a XLRI graduate, proper this thing, all these blue chip jobs. When did you find the time to write a book, and what made you write that book?
I think when I first wrote, it was, 2005 when I wrote the first two works of fiction, Mediocre But Arrogant, Married But Available. Those actually came in from building on my own experiences of going to XLRI, being in a B school, and then also looking at, first 10 years of work, I think are the most significant. A lot happens in the first 10 years of work. So the story was, I didn't want to write a work which was nonfiction, that here are 10 things that I learned about, being in your first job. So if you tell it like a story, then I think it just has a wider audience. So that's what was there. Then I switched to writing nonfiction because there was so much that I was learning about the world which was there. But I definitely have a goal to finish after this Dreamers and Unicorns is done and dusted. Then I want to go back and write my third book of fiction. So that's still very much on the cards.
And when do you find the time to write, or when did you find the time to write when you were working full-time?
I think when you work full-time, there is a lot more opportunity to write because, you are traveling. So then airports are a terrific place for me to write. The flight timing, nobody disturbs you. There are no phone calls. And then you can write there. And then, you don't have to do everything on the same day. If you do a little bit of writing today, a little bit of drawing tomorrow, something you do in the morning, something you do in the evening, I think there are plenty of opportunities. And I think writing or drawing has more to do with observing rather than writing or drawing. So that you can sharpen all the time, any which way, you know. So, and then when you talk to interesting people like yourself, then, you know, you get many more ideas. I think, you know, I can sort of see a story brewing in my head about, you know, how do you change the format of that game to make it happen? And then maybe there is something that I'll write about that. But thank you ever so much for being here and part of this show. Joy's view of living in a golden age, you know, an age of abundance, really struck a chord with me. But more than that, I loved how he stays curious and remains a dreamer. He now wants to learn a language, make a film, read more about science and history, much like what a dreamer does. So in short, always keep your dreams alive. Joy, if they want to find you, where can they email you or find you on social media?
Twitter at Joy Bhattacharj. Because my name is too long for the YA to come at the end. So it's JoyBhattacharj. I think that's the best place to find it.
So don't forget to tune in every Wednesday. Dreamers and Unicorns 2.0 has been produced by HT Smartcast. To give it a listen, log on to htsmartcast.com. Aur haan, are suniye zara naye nazariye se. Kya? Phir milte hain. Jaldi.
This was an HT Smartcast original.
HT Smartcast.